Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Crocher. Something new on the innovation scene is Bioproducts Alberta. This new group will focus its attention on diversifying Alberta's agriculture and life sciences sector. Everything from straw to manure has market potential, and companies working with these raw feedstocks were showcased at the inaugural Bioproducts Alberta workshop in Nisku. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Bioproducts Alberta is a new joint initiative between BioAlberta and Alberta Innovation and Science. And what they're depending on as their raw resource is everything biological and farm-based, things like sawdust, straw, and manure. Just south of Edmonton on Highway 2 is the Nisku Industrial Park, and Nisku is where people interested in biomass and bioproducts gathered last week to learn more about the potential of this new industry. John Christensen is the manager of Bioproducts Alberta.
It's in response to a pretty good opportunity in this industry. We have, for years, ignored, if you will, the possibility of industrial products from agricultural and forestry industry. All forestry is doing industrial, but agriculture in particular, we've focused on food, and we've pretty well ignored the fact that there's industrial applications.
What might those be?
Everything in the from fibers to adhesives to resins to plastics to textiles. The whole agricultural industry worldwide does a lot of work in industrial. And just in the case of the prairies, we're the ones ignoring it. We're just going to do a little catch-up now. We have great opportunities.
Are these coming from the crops that we're already growing?
For the most part, they're existing crops, although in some cases the flax, the hemp and such are minor crops at this point. They have the potential of becoming major crops because of that. In some other cases, it's going to be brand new that we've probably never really seen before, other than maybe a test plot or two. So it's a combination.
You've got a workshop going today. What's happening here?
We're focused on agricultural fibers. And the other part of the program is on biomass energy, utilization of residual materials out of agriculture and forestry.
What's the market opportunity at this time? Is it something that we see the potential for, but there isn't necessarily the market there for it yet? Or have we moved into that area where there is some momentum and some money to be made?
Well, I think we've moved into where there's opportunities, where there's money to be made. These have identified commercial outlets. So it's not a case of generating knowledge and then not knowing what to do with the knowledge. This is a case of we're trying to fill in gaps in a commercial sense. And so we look at these as legitimate commercial opportunities within the next 5 to 10 year period.
Who's helping you out?
Just about everybody. There's a good groundswell of support within bioproducts. Everybody within the government circles, within institutes, within a number of industry players, different associations around. There's a lot of interest. It's the right time.
What word of advice, then, do you have for farmers about bioproducts?
Learn about it. Find out what you can about it. Be patient. This is not going to develop overnight. This is going to be likely a decade or two transition. But what it will do is will offer different opportunities than you have today.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
That was John Christensen, manager of Bioproducts Alberta. One of the first speakers of the day at the Bioproducts Alberta showcase was Wade Shute. It's his job with the Alberta Research Council to determine the market potential for alternate fibers in forest products.
Well, actually, there's a lot of exciting things that are happening right now. We've recently created an agri-fibers network that involves researchers and industry and government in the province of Alberta, but also extending across Canada.
And with this new Bioproducts Alberta initiative, how do you see all of this coming together?
Well, the bioproducts is really lending a focus to the use of agricultural materials as feedstocks for a lot of different industries. The one that I know the most about, obviously, is going to be fiber, because pulp and paper industry is a fiber-based industry. But there are other industries that they're also helping to get established.
What were you trying to get across to people today?
Well, basically, I wanted to get across the concept that there are other fiber sources that are out there that represent some opportunities for fiber-based industry. Certainly the pulp and paper sector, they already use a very diverse range of raw materials produced globally, that there's no reason in the world why agri-fibers shouldn't be considered as potential feedstocks.
What are some of those new potentials?
Well, basically, the fiber properties that occur in different raw materials have a direct impact on the resulting products that you make from them. For example, wheat straw itself produces a wonderful pulp that can be used in paper to impart sheet smoothness and also to reduce energy consumption in terms of refining after the fact. There are some other opportunities with respect to reinforcement fibers from plants such as hemp and flax.
Now, you mentioned straw. People have tried straw before, and they've had all kinds of technical problems. Are we making any progress there?
Well, the technical problems that have been encountered is primarily when people are producing 100% of their pulp from cereal straw. Now, the Chinese have been doing this for hundreds of years, literally, and they've encountered many of the same issues, but at the same time, there are other technological ways using modern technology and modern knowledge to get out from underneath some of those problems. And certainly when we're talking about the Alberta context, we're not talking about 100% raw material here. We're talking about blending or attaching a small pulping facility to the side of a bigger pulping facility, which will basically reduce the impact that other people have experienced on a 100% basis by simply a matter of dilution.
There's a number of pulp mills in Alberta. Are they open to this?
Well, probably the lead advocate of it to date, and I really am very encouraged by this, is the Alberta Pacific Pulp Mill in Boyle. The reason is they're just on the northern tip of where there is a sizable agricultural land base, and there have actually been straw board plants that have been proposed in that area near Thorhild. There is basically an opportunity for Alpac to use some of that land base to grow fibers for their own needs, whether or not those are going to be agricultural residuals or dedicated perennials or dedicated fiber crops has yet to be determined. But certainly by their geographical location, they are really poised to take advantage of this.
What's the Research Council doing?
Well, what we're just trying to do is help people understand what opportunities that fibers, different fiber sources present. Simple fiber characterization, you know, learning what the length, width, and diameter of these fibers are. Learning what sort of pulping properties that they actually have when you roll them into a sheet of paper. Some of the bleaching costs, some of the chemical pulping costs, some of the refining costs. Just trying to put a complete cost understanding behind this raw material and then hand that off to the industry such that they can actually take some of the pulp and do a market assessment based on that. And at the end of the day, with the understanding of the markets as well as the understanding of the raw materials themselves and the cost that's required to pulp those raw materials, they will be able to make a very good business decision as to whether or not this is going to go.
Thank you very much, Wade.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Wade Shute, manager of the Pulp and Paper Business Unit at the Alberta Research Council. Also speaking at the Bioproducts Alberta Showcase in Nisku was Alvin Ulrich. Alvin is president of BioLin Research and a fiber specialist with the Saskatchewan Flax Development Commission. When it comes to flax and linen, Alvin believes there's plenty of room for Canada to get into the market.
The market right now for fiber is probably 500,000 or 600,000 tons a year for all types of flax fiber, but the potential is some millions of tons if we can get the quality better. And a good example would be cottonized flax. Right now there's maybe less than 100,000 tons a year used of cottonized flax. But if we can get a little lower price and a little better quality, there's no reason to think we couldn't sell several million tons a year, which would still only represent 5 to 10% of the total worldwide cotton market, and that would be less than 2 to 5% of the whole textile market in the world.
Who's the big supplier right now? What country?
The biggest producer of flax fiber is China, and the second biggest is probably Russia. The biggest exporter is France, and the second biggest exporter is Belgium. So the Chinese produce lots of flax, but they use it all themselves, and they are also the biggest importer. The Russians are the second biggest producer, but they basically consume all they produce, and so they're kind of an island onto themselves. France and Belgium are exporting more and more every year as their own spinners and weavers move to lower wage countries.
Do we have the conditions here to actually grow the kind of flax that the world needs?
We've been working on research and management techniques to cope with the kind of weather we have. We have drier weather and a shorter growing season than in Europe, but flax likes cool weather, and we found that if we place the straw in a thin layer across the field as soon as we can in the fall after seed harvest, that we can get good retting either by late fall or early spring. If we have good retting and we have even-sized pieces, we can get much, much better quality fiber. And the best quality we could sell for textiles, the lower or middle qualities we could sell for plastic composites, for insulation products, filtration products. Low-end quality, there's still the specialty paper people, the geotextiles markets. So, yes, we could grow much better quality, and we could grow a lot more of it.
You've mentioned the term retting. What's that?
Retting is an old term, an old Dutch term for rotting, and it really means partial rotting of the straw to the point where the bast fiber separates easily from the rest of the stem.
Today you've talked about some of the problems that producers would have to overcome, and one of them has to do with how the straws lay down on the field. What are we doing now that's wrong?
Normally the straw is coming out of a combine. Now, combines are designed to be cost-effective, getting large volumes of seed out of straw very quickly, and they do a wonderful job of that. They were never designed to be gentle on the straw. The straw, flax straw, when it goes through a combine, is bashed into long and short pieces. We get lots of dust. We drop it out in wads out of the combine. It sits on stubble. It's kept 2 or 3 inches off the ground. It generally stays dry. The wads, the top of the wad shed the rain. The bottom of the wad might touch the ground and start rotting, but much of the straw in those wads has no way to interact with its environment. It's sheltered. It's like in a little haystack, and it'll sit there for 2 or 3 years. It doesn't ret. The pieces are very uneven. It's very hard to process. Because it's not retted, it's very hard to get clean fiber out of it. So even if that straw was free, you'll find that most processors in the world, when they see it, they are not interested in it because it's of a quality that they can't get anything out of. The only people that are using it are people that are making specialty papers and or really low-end plastic composites.
Something else you also talked about was cottonizing. What's that?
Cottonizing is, there's about 6 or 7 methods that are used to turn longer flax fibers into fibers that are between 3/4 of an inch and 2 inches long with a diameter roughly like cotton. And the reason you want to do that is so that you can blend it easily with cotton or acrylic or polyester and spin it on the cotton system spinning equipment. About 90% of the world's spinning equipment is the cotton spinning equipment. So if we want to sell more in the textile market, we need to have more of that fiber in a form they can use, which is cottonized.
But do people really want to wear flax or linen clothes or whatever other fiber products can be made from it? It's awfully wrinkly, isn't it?
Old-style linen was very comfortable, very cool, but it wrinkled lots. Newer-style linen, and there's more and more of it being produced now, there's a couple methods to get rid of the wrinkling. One is to treat it with a chemical finish, just like your wrinkle-free cotton pants. The wrinkling is not totally eliminated, but it's greatly reduced. The other one is to knit it. And for hundreds of years, linen was never wrinkled because the yarn was too uneven and it would break when it went in a knitting machine. The newest drawing and drafting machinery that's made in Europe, combined with better quality fiber from the farms in Europe, can make very, very even yarn, which can now be knitted. When you knit linen, you get the products that don't wrinkle. They're much like a cotton golf shirt or most sportswear. The knitting makes it very flexible, and so it becomes very easy to care for. Linen absorbs about 50% more moisture than cotton, so it gives you a sensation of coolness that you don't get from cotton. Cotton is wonderful. Linen is much more wonderful if you're on especially a hot, humid day and you wear a knitted linen golf shirt. I can't think of anything that's cooler or more comfortable, and I've worn certainly cotton, and I've worn knitted linen, and knitted linen is far more comfortable and cool.
What got you on the flax bandwagon?
About 6 or 7 years ago, when I was doing some consulting work, I met a group from Hong Kong that was, they were big buyers and sellers of linen fibers, yarns, fabrics, garments. Anyway, we started working together, and I was going, this is like a whole new world opening to me. And it seemed like there was a lot of wonderful opportunities that we could have or could meet if only people knew more about the opportunity. It just was kind of, I guess, a challenge, and it seemed like an adventure. I just got interested, and I guess the linen bug got to me, and it's still in me somewhere.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I was speaking with Alvin Ulrich, president of BioLin Research, and also a fiber specialist with the Saskatchewan Flax Development Commission. Generating energy and heat from biomass makes up another part of the bioproducts industry. And Alberta has lots of potential here, as Steve O'Gorman was eager to point out at the recent Bioproducts Alberta Showcase in Nisku. Steve is the manager of business development and marketing with Canadian Hydro Developers, Inc.
Canadian Hydro is building a biomass facility in Grand Prairie, and we take wood waste from the Canfor mill in Grand Prairie and convert that into both heat and power.
How large of an undertaking is this?
Well, the project itself is $56 million, so it's quite substantial, and we're going to be generating 25 megawatts of electricity. Compared to the grid right now, it's a small portion, certainly less than 1%. Just by way of interest, green power, which this is part of, is about 2% of the total Alberta grid.
So you're using all this wood waste. What's the end product? How is it getting circulated?
The end product, of course, is primarily electricity, but it's also heat. And we're supplying heat in the form of steam to the mill. And there's also provision in the future to provide heat to the city of Grand Prairie. They're looking at developing a district heating system that would see us provide heat to the hospital and the college and the municipal building. So it's a very exciting possible development there.
Are there models for this? Is it being used elsewhere?
Yes, there are models in Europe. It's very extensively used in Europe.
What is it that you have to do to ensure your supply of wood so that you can get this power?
Well, the wood comes from the Canfor mill at Grand Prairie, primarily, and secondarily from their mill in Hinds Creek. And basically, this is bark from the trees, as well as sawdust that is produced in the process of making the board that they produce at those mills.
Have you had any obstacles or challenges that you've had to overcome in developing technology for this plant?
No, the technology is fairly straightforward. It's a well-proven design. It's used extensively throughout the world. The barriers were more financial, quite frankly. We now have contracts in place with the government of Alberta and the city of Grand Prairie and with Canfor, and it's really contracting the output that is essential to financing the project, and that was really the biggest barrier.
You're here to speak at the Bioproducts Alberta workshop. What is it that you want to get across to the audience today?
Well, I'd like to convey the message that biomass is a substantial form of green power. It does make a very solid contribution. Our view as a company is that it takes a portfolio approach to build a renewables industry. So that includes wind, small hydro, and biomass. And our company has projects in each of these major resources.
When will the plant open?
We expect the plant open later this year, fall 2004. It should be fully commissioned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cheryl.
That was Steve O'Gorman, Manager of Business Development and Marketing at Canadian Hydro Developers, Inc. Keynote speaker at the Bioproducts Alberta Showcase in Nisku was Stefan Michalski. Stefan hails from Berlin. He's now in Alberta working with ECB Enviro North America Limited to develop a biogas project in Fort McLeod.
The European Union and all the countries in Germany, they try to reach some higher percentage of bioenergy than before. We have new legislation, for example, on biofuels that forces somehow the people and the governments to do something. And we have, especially on the biofuel sector, we have a great explosion of facilities, of capacities. And I try to explain a little bit today what is happening in Europe, maybe what can be learned from mistakes that we made, and so that we do not have to reinvent the wheel again here.
What can we learn from you?
Oh, you can learn a lot. You can learn that sometimes there are very similar and very easy sounding reasons that a project is not successful or cannot be established, because the most important thing is to bring the right people to the table and to ensure that everybody has a value out of this project. And this is the most difficult thing. And if the Canadian market or if the Canadian people are looking a little bit what went wrong in Europe, it's, you can maybe save 5, 6, 7, or 10 years.
What are you using as the fuel? Is it manure?
I'm especially talking about my experience in the biogas sector. The biogas will be produced out of manure and other organic wastes, and normally you put this in a digester on a certain temperature and you will produce a gas, the methane, and this is put into a generator which produces electricity and also heat, and this is the normal type of process. And the other thing that is not so common here in Canada now, but for example in the US, it's the production from a biofuel, we call it biodiesel, that is made out of canola, for example.
How widespread is the use of this in Europe?
It's growing rapidly at the moment, because the EU in Brussels has set up some new legislation that every country has to establish a certain percentage of this fuel in the market within a very short time. And now everybody is regarding or is looking at it very, very more seriously than before. And you will find the big oil companies being involved in this, which so far have only been smiling a little bit on this new thing. And so it will become more and more involved in the daily business than before.
What kinds of problems or setbacks have you faced in Europe?
Oh, the major problem is maybe to finance these projects or to get these projects financed while the regulations hasn't been so certain as they are now. We have a legislation, for example, that every single kilowatt hour that has been produced out of green or renewable energy has to be paid by the utility for a certain price. And we discussed about this a very long time. And as long as this regulation is not in place and it is not a stable condition that you can rely on, for example, bankers or investment companies, they do nothing than sitting and waiting. And that has been one of the big problems in Germany. And now we have it is not longer unsure that you will get paid these certain amounts, and so you can rely on this and you can forecast your business plan 10 or 15 years as long as you get some loans from the bank. And this is all more stable now than before.
You're here in Alberta because you also have what you've called a companion or a sister project. Yeah. What's that?
Oh, we've been working here on a project in Alberta for more than 2 years now, because it is in the southern region of Alberta, which is called, I guess, the Feedlot Alley. It's in the area of Lethbridge, so you have a high density of manure there, and it causes more and more problems to use this, to store this, and to spread the manure. So we started looking out if there is a possibility to have a pilot project there. We got very much support from the County of Lethbridge. We got very much support from the Cement Association of Canada, which is looking into this agricultural market also as a new opportunity. And we did a feasibility study, which gets some very promising results. And now during this year, we hope that everything around this project is fit into the right place so that we can start with the construction this year. It's a biogas plant that is operating on manure and organic waste. It's not a on-site farm unit. It's a more industrial, large-scale plant. It will be most likely a 2 or 3 megawatt plant. It's maybe something different than it is on other projects that are already under construction or here in Alberta.
So this then is something that would supply power from the biogas to a number of different industries or companies or plants?
Actually, we are in discussion with several consumers because feeding the power into the grid will be the most uneconomic thing, I guess, because even if you get this premium here and on the normal price, it is not this attractive as it might be if you can sell it directly to other consumers. But there are a lot of negotiations going on at the moment, so it is not 100% sure who will buy the energy now.
Do you have any technological problems to overcome, or is it more just market kind of things?
No, it's the technology of getting biogas, it's not a big secret. So it's a very old thing, and the Chinese used it for long, long times. But it's more what we do from Europe. It's more to bring the experience to run these plants, to operate these plants, because our Canadian partners here, they have analyzed a little bit the Canadian tries in biogas before, so it's nothing new here. But when it comes to the point that you have to run it economically daily, not on a research base, then it becomes a problem. And we, especially the company that I work for, were involved in many operations of these biogas plants. So this is the thing you can learn, not the technology maybe itself, but how to make money out of it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Stefan Michalski, an environmental consultant with ECB Enviro North America Limited. I also spoke with Steve O'Gorman, Alvin Ulrich, Wade Shute, and John Christensen. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Research Council, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the University of Lethbridge, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Conservation Association, the Capital Region Innovation Centre, Alberta Ingenuity, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.